Take a network break. Dunk a virtual donut in your iced coffee and join us for our weekly analysis of tech news. I'm Drew Conry Murray, and with me as always is Greg Farrow. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV, an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription, visit itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code NETWORKBREAK30. This episode of Network Break is also being sponsored by Apstra and the Intent to Party Party. If you're going to Cisco Live this June, you can join Apstra and the Packet Pushers at a live event on Monday the 26th at the Border Grill. There'll be drinks, food, and great conversation. To request an invitation, just go to go.apstra.com/event-packet-pushers-party. All right, to the news. Broadcom has announced the latest version of its Trident ASIC. It's called Trident 3. The new chipset's going to be available in 5 different flavors for wireless, for campus, for data center, other use cases. And Broadcom is also touting the programmability of this ASIC.
Yeah, very exciting, isn't it? Like merchant silicon, the fun never ends. In fact, today is a cram-packed show all about hardware, it seems.
This is the hardware show, yes. They saved it all up for today.
Last week we were going, you know, where's the hardware? Where's the hardware? This week it's all hardware all the way down, all new silicon. So Broadcom's Trident 3 is, of course, one of the key chips that if you're into white box or merchant silicon, you're going to be aware of it. Although we've seen a lot of vendors lately start to stop talking about the silicon that's inside it, I think that's a marketing thing. What I mean by that is, like, for example, we're talking about the Aruba switch last week, Drew.
Right.
Yeah, and they said they didn't want to talk about the silicon that was in it. It's always possible that, you know, now that the Trident 3 is out, they'll start saying, oh, yes, it's got a Trident 3 in it. Probably doesn't.
Right.
Or there's some other silicon coming out in the second half of this year that we don't know about yet. Don't want to talk about it. Or it's also possible that vendors don't want to get focused on, like, an Intel x86 discussion.
Sure. I mean, when you're the silicon, when it's a merchant silicon, it doesn't really matter if everybody else is using it too. It's just a checkbox and why spend time on it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of, like, when people buy servers, they spend an awful lot of time to researching which CPUs in the server, and that determines its performance and capabilities. I'm fairly sure if you're a networking vendor, you want people focused on your operating system and your apps.
That's right.
And not so much on the fact that you took somebody else's ASIC and dropped it onto the board there.
There's definitely people trying to add more value through software, and so that's what they want to talk about.
But I think that tension's going to go forward from now on. I was just doing a list of all the different merchant silicon we've got, and it's extraordinary. There's just so much of it. But anyway, Broadcom announced its Trident 3 ASIC. It's got increased performance and increased port density, as you might expect. There's 5 versions of it because it's trying to target the wireless, the campus, the data center as well, right? So we now have the X3, the X5, the X7, and the X2. The X2 and the X3 are fairly aimed at the campus. That's sort of like 1 gig, 10 gig. Low density, lower speeds. It's also suitable for wireless use. So some of them have 2.5 gig SerDes support. So if you think that 2.5 gig and 5 gig wireless is, you know, that Ethernet that's only going to be used by wireless base stations is actually important to you, then that's going to matter to you. They are obviously smaller, lower cost chips. I blogged about this at Packet Pushers. I've put a whole bunch of screenshots from the announcement there. So if you want to know more about what's actually happening there and get some deep dives into the exact Apple details, a couple of things that I picked out that were important is that Broadcom wanted to promote to us the fact that it's got a 5-stage programmable pipeline. The Trident now has much better programmability. That means you can now actually start doing much more. If you remember Trident 1, Trident 2, you sort of had problems with VXLAN, with de-encapsulating the packet and then bringing it in, mapping it from VLAN to VLAN, and then L3 routing it. Well, that problem's pretty much solved in the Trident 3. They also talked about a recirculating pipeline so they can do multi-stage announcements and then recirculate. They also talked about that the internal architecture of the silicon now has support for in-service software update operations. In other words, write a hot load of the software above it. So you can now update the operating systems without actually causing the TCAM to pop, so that it's now up to the software owner to implement ISSU operations, of course. So that doesn't mean that it's ISSU for everybody, if you know what I mean. They've done some serious upgrades. So one of the things that we don't often talk about is the speed between the ASIC and the CPU memory that actually is in the switch. So most switches now have, you know, server class CPUs in them, or they should have. And it's a question of just how you connect the ASIC to the CPU and memory. And in the case of the Broadcom, they're using a PCIe bus, but they've upgraded that to 32 gigabits per second bidirectional. And so that's a definite improvement. So you're going to be able to do a lot more programming of the memory at greater speed and at lower latency than you were before. Keep in mind that other people are doing it differently. Some people, like, for example, Barefoot, are doing this with a 100 gig Ethernet interface. I don't know the relative benefits or disadvantages of one or the other, but faster is better because you want to get the software on the switch says, I want to talk to the ASIC. Boom. You don't want to run it on like a 19K serial line like you did in the years gone by. And I'm serious about that. And I think perhaps the most outstanding call out, and the one that really, really caught my attention, Drew, and I tweeted about this and got a huge response, is that Broadcom had a slide in there with the price on it. Did you see that?
I did, yes.
Yeah. And that's really extraordinarily unusual, isn't it?
To actually pull out the pricing, yeah. Yeah, they're very close-mouthed about that.
Yeah. You're announcing it. It's going to ship later this year. And you don't normally talk about pricing because you haven't quite decided. But what they actually pointed out was that people who make switches, the OEM vendors, will wholesale a 32-port 100-gig switch, just the hardware, that's the bare metal switch, for under $3,000 per unit. Now, you'll have to buy 1,000 of them to get that price, but $3 million
yeah.
for 1,000 units. I've bought networks for more, like entire
right.
data center.
You know? Right. No, that's, so, yeah.
It's extraordinary. I mean, just think about that, $3,000 for a switch, that's OEM. But if you're somebody who's building out, you know, a web scale type data center, that's roughly the same price as one server.
Right.
Which is a real turnaround. Like, you know, we used to see top of rack switches priced in at $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 each, jam-packed with features and brand names and, you know, all this tried and trusted software and all that sort of stuff. But the actual underlying hardware cost is now shrinking to just a few thousand dollars per. Just to give you a sense for that, I checked out on one of the online sites for optics, and I can buy a 100 gigabit Ethernet SR4, that's the multimode optic, for $300 each. So if you buy 32 of those, that's $9,600. Add 10K for a lifetime license of your Cumulus Linux or some other OS app stack, you know, whatever your favorite flavor is. You're looking at all up 30K, maybe 40K for a 32-port 100-gig switch. That's $1,000 per 100-gig port. That's a real transition. Sadly, that means the network adapters that you put in your servers are going to be quite expensive because 100-gig NICs are, you have to get really fancy NICs to do that. They have to have processors and everything. Yeah, so really exciting announcement. This, I think we're going to see a raft of Trident 3 announced top of rack. So the Trident 3, of course, is a top of rack switch. It's the one with all the fancy features. So it's got things like VXLAN and programmability and all that sort of stuff. There's another chipset in the Broadcom product line called the Tomahawk. The Tomahawk is a much lower complexity in terms of features, but it's fast. So it's the switch that'll go into the spine or into your chassis where you need to have the ECMP spine. So you need lots and lots of routes, but very, very low latency, lots of speed, much higher density. So less complex in terms of features, but more complex in terms of silicon. And the guess sort of is that there must be a Tomahawk announcement coming in the next period to take advantage of this. So the Trident 3 is your top of rack. You'll see that. No doubt it will flow down through the Cisco lines. They've got the Nexus switches. Although Cisco's been pushing its cloud scale ASIC, that's also a chip that comes out of Avago. Actually, I heard some rumors this week that the cloud scale ASIC is an Avago product, which is, of course, you know, Avago and Broadcom merged to become
a
company.
To become one.
Yeah, but it's, you know, Cisco's only made small changes to that ASIC. It's not a pure in-house development, apparently. So yeah, very exciting. A couple of things to look out for. Programmability, they made a big thing about the programmability and the telemetry features and just that they were like most of the other people. I didn't get the sense that this is competitive against other people's programmability. So if you're looking for something that's got full packet manipulation and deep capabilities for packet munging and all sort, you know, that sort of stuff, then I think the Trident 3 may have been eclipsed by its competitors like the Barefoot Networks Tofino, of course. Novium doesn't ship until next year, so let's not worry about that. I think the Xpliant is probably still better. I'm not too sure where the Marvell Prestera is at this point in time, but we'll talk more about that at the bottom of the show. So programmability probably less, which makes sense. Broadcom is much more focused on the mass market. So Trident 3. And then the last thing I wanted to call out is it's using a 14-nanometer manufacturing process. Now, that is fundamentally the same as modern CPUs. So the current generations of mainline CPUs that are out there today are on 14 nanometer silicon. So that means this is a state-of-the-art silicon. It's low powered, it's fast, and it's right on the leading edge, which tells me that silicon vendors are taking their network silicon seriously. And that's good for us, I think.
That is. So regarding the programmability, Barefoot, which is pushing programmability as one of its key differentiators, reached out with an email saying, yeah, look at this. It's not quite as programmable as we are. You know, that sort of competitive positioning that you'd expect. I wanted to ask you if you had a sense of how Broadcom is exposing this programmability. We know Barefoot does it via the P4 language. Is Broadcom requiring folks to still use an SDK to get in there, or how are they doing this? Do you know?
Yeah, they've still got their NDK, their Network Developers Kit, that they offer. So they have the any vendor who's going to be using the Trident 3, if they're using the Trident 2, they're just going to be able to use the Trident 3, and basically it'll go faster and more density. Broadcom's NDK remains a Broadcom thing. You have to sign a license to be able to access it. And I think you could make the case that Barefoot needed to do something to get exposure to the market. And being closed is being open and publishing the P4 and creating it, making it as easy as possible, making it an industry-wide movement to use an open standard, does disrupt Broadcom's dominance here. So whether it's a technical advantage or a marketing advantage, currently I'm of the view that P4 is a technical advantage and the Tofino's implementation of it is technically probably better for most people. But at the flip side, Broadcom is the incumbent. There's a lot of switches out there that are using Broadcom Trident, and that API that they use is already in an awful lot of people's software. Will they make the shift from Broadcom's MDK away to P4? That's something that, you know,
that's up in the air. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing for Broadcom is that they are in this market from a position of strength. That's Barefoot and others who are pushing programmability that need that kind of differentiation. So Broadcom, I think, has a little bit of space and time to see just how much uptake there is and how much it will impact their market. But, you know, going forward the next couple of generations, I don't see it as being a major issue for them, but definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think it's exciting to see that network silicon is iterating so fast. Keep in mind here that this market is not as vast as iPhone baseband modems or chipsets that
servers,
go on, or servers, or, you know, all the other things that you can make chips for. The networking market is a very unique, high density, high value market. So these processors must be selling for really good money for them to make them at all. But, you know, look at the pace of innovation here. Trident 1, Trident 2, Trident 3, really great for customers to see this very fast cycle of hardware, well, relatively fast cycle of hardware. And I think that's really good news for everybody. And Broadcom should certainly, you know, you should get inside of this and start to understand how this changes the financial, like the money structure of the industry per se. But also understand that, you know, this thing's going to be a 32-port, 100-gig. You know, there's 5 different versions of this chip and you'll be able to buy a switch that fits your needs. You know, and it runs from sort of like 1.2 terabits per second up to 3.2 terabits per second. And that's what the networking needs is an innovation cycle around hardware that happens very quickly so that you can go and get new products cheaply and rotate them quickly. I really feel like this is this thing I've been saying for quite some time, that you can't hold on to network switches for 10 years and expect them to just keep using them, right? You've got to get to the point where you're throwing them out every 3 years, just like your servers. And you can't do that if they're $50,000 a switch, but when they're like $5,000 a switch, you certainly can start talking about that.
That's right. Yeah, it changes the whole buying model. All right, sticking with hardware, Mellanox, they've announced that their Spectrum Ethernet switch ASIC is going to power an Ethernet fabric for HPE's Synergy platform. Synergy is sort of converged infrastructure, runs compute and storage and now networking for you, so you can run virtual and container-based workloads. Synergy models with Mellanox are going to be available in the third quarter of this year, 2017.
Really interesting. Again, this is Mellanox's silicon. So this is the same silicon that runs in their SN2200 switch, if I read the release correctly. I haven't seen anything from Mellanox about this. It's just a press release that came out on HP's website. What they're actually doing is, if you're buying HP Blade servers, which is part of their composable architecture, my understanding is that this Synergy switch module is now the Ethernet connectivity that goes into the back of the composable architecture. So having previously worked with HP Blade servers and realized just how much of a mess their previous architecture was, so the way that Cisco UCS works is they don't put a switch in the back of the blade, they put a fancy NIC. And all the servers that go into the chassis basically share this network adapter that's in the back of the blade. What HP is doing here is actually putting in one of Mellanox's SN2200 silicons, which is their top-of-rack switching solution. It's 12 by 100 gig. It's, you know, really quite something. It's got an open capability. And what HP is basically doing is saying, well, we'll just connect 10 gig, 25 gig, 100 gig to this switch, have a switch fabric in the back of the blade, and then connect that out at whatever you want, 25, 50, 100.
That's right. Off you go.
Off you go. So that's a good solution for people who are going to buy that composable architecture. It's very flexible. None of the limitations of these NICs. And, you know, with the greatest will in the world, HP's implementation of that network adapter software was less than predictable at the best of times, shall we say. So I could hope that this would be a more natural, more native, you know, native to the networking type thing. And they would be able to start implementing things like VXLAN and that adapter and high speed performance and stuff like that. So that's a good move, I think.
All right. And they're positioning it for cloud, financial services, telcos, and high performance computing.
Yeah, well, you want to start selling at the top, of course.
Of course. And right for the money.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, cloud and web scale is going to be a theme in this. This is where everybody is positioning their hardware this way. So moving on to our next story, Nokia, they've announced the FP4. This is a new network processor. They're promising throughput of 2.4 terabits per second. It comes from Nokia's Alcatel acquisition back in 2016. And here we go again. Nokia is targeting web scale players with super fast routers that are going to be built on FP4.
I'm just going to have to poke some fun at this because I had to watch the YouTube announcement here.
Did you? Oh, dear.
Yeah. And so it takes a special type of marketing department to put on this massive event. Everybody's sitting around in lounge chairs, you know, in a fully custom-built area with the stage and everything. But instead of having, like, you know, the super uncomfortable seats that you get in a convention center?
Yes.
You know, the ones that just somehow manage to be just so uncomfortable, even though they look like an ordinary chair, but they're quite uncomfortable.
Specially designed to keep you from falling asleep, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know, whatever it is. But somehow they managed to make the world's most uncomfortable chairs in convention centers. But they put lounge chairs all over, like, you know, sofas all the way around and had this big thing. And then they recorded it in 360-degree virtual reality. And that's the only version they posted to YouTube.
Oh,
so to get this information, I had to watch 90 minutes of this really average presentation from people who really didn't think about what they were going to say.
Oh, dear.
And I had to watch it in 2D, which was recorded in 3D. So I hope you appreciate, people at home, what I've done for you here today.
The sacrifice you've made. Having to put up with terrible, terrible marketing.
Yes. So, of course, this comes from Alcatel-Lucent. So Alcatel-Lucent was acquired by Nokia sometime over the last 2 or 3 years. We've talked about that extensively. They have always had a really advanced metro Ethernet carrier backbone type solution. It's been huge. And part of this has been their network processor that actually does the packet processing inside of their switches. So they made a big song and dance about the launch of their FP4 silicon, which, you know, made my heart flutter because you don't get hardware every day. It's not like every week you get hardware on this show.
It's a banquet.
It's a banquet this week. And it's just like, so this network processor is quite something. It's got 22 dies on the chip. So most chips are just one die, one chip. But this actually built 22 dies on a single chip. They created their own memory architecture to be able to do performance. That sounds crazy to me on the face of it. Quote of the day was, it's a bargain, but it's not cheap.
Okay. How do you reconcile that?
I don't know. Well, you know, I guess what he's trying to say is it's expensive, but it'll be worth it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Except he fluffed the line. He said it's cheap and it's a bargain, but it's not a bargain.
Oh, dear.
It was like this massive peg. It was very funny. The FP4 starts coming to market in Q4. With these FP4 processors, the Alcatel-Lucent chassis can now start to clock out at more than 100 terabits per second. And in fact, they announced a brand new chassis called the 7950XRS XC. So those of you who've been following along with the Alcatel-Lucent chassis will know that they have the 7750SRs. They've released, from what I can tell, there's not a lot of technical detail around, so I'm just going to extrapolate some based on what we know from previous years. 7750SRs has now been scaled up to 288 terabits per second. That means it can support something like 1440, 100 gig Ethernet interfaces in a 24RU form factor. So today, single chassis, if you make it a rack high, you can get 1440, 100 gig Ethernet switches in there using these FP4-driven line cards. New switch, 7950XRS-XC. That's not enough to just call it 7950, of course. You've got to have some magic on the back.
You've got to throw some X's in there.
Yeah, it now delivers 0.576 petabits per second of switching capacity. So that's a half a petabit in a solution that scales from 1 to 6 chassis. So they've built some sort of interconnect between the chassis. You can put 6 of them together, and that means you can get some stupid sorts of numbers. And there's a link in the show which can take you out to just how far this thing's going to go. And it's really quite a step forward. And obviously, it's targeted at like the Cisco with the CRS3 and the, you know, the big carrier backbones and the metro Ethernet backbones and that sort of stuff. But that's where it's headed. It's just this monster thing. Just to poke fun at the marketing people again, if you're going to produce a switch that does a half a petabit per second, don't call it petabit class. It's half a petabit. But, you know, I guess, you know, 0.5 and a bit, we'll just round it up and call it a petabit switch. You know,
we're all friends here. We'll round up.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's like, but, you know, amazing looking piece of technology, just a little overhyping. There's only so much magic you can extract out of a chassis, ultimately.
But still, sounds very fast. And again, they're also targeting web scale, looking at the Facebooks of the world who are pushing lots of video and lots of data over the network.
They're talking a lot about, they made a lot of song and dance, a lot of noise about the fact that because it's the network processors are that advanced, they can do an awful lot of packet munging and inspection. And so this means that they can drive directly into deep field. Now, Nokia acquired a company called Deep Field about, four months ago, sort of January to March timeframe. And DeepField is able to take all the telemetry off this chassis via the usual methods, you know, Yang models, gRPC, et cetera, and feed them into this platform. And it was one of the leaders there. You know, of course, companies like Kentik, and we've done shows with DeepField and Kentik, so you go and listen to those podcasts if you want to understand them. But they take the streaming telemetry coming out of these boxes at, consider, you know, half a petabit per second. Imagine how much data you're talking at a telemetry level.
Massive.
Yeah. And remember, we went to Juniper for a recent network field day. And I'll have to mea culpa here. They were talking about how, you know, their telemetry capability was really amazing and how this and that and the little level of features. I didn't sort of get it at the time, but now I'm starting to understand just how much of an engineering feat it is at this scale, like hundreds of 100 gig interfaces or 400 gig interfaces or even terabit Ethernet, how difficult it is to actually get telemetry data out of the operating system when there's that much data flowing through in the data plane.
Absolutely.
So I'm starting to sort of regret the thought that I had that, you know, this is all great and everything, but this, isn't this what a switch does? It doesn't seem, you know, this is what a Juniper router is supposed to do. This is what an XRS should do. Didn't sort of think about it in terms of just how much of an amazing engineering feat. And I think this
You're starting to come around, you're saying.
Yeah, I think this telemetry and visibility in the network is actually a service in and of its own right. Normally, we just assume that if we plug everything together and get the mystic priest in to sprinkle holy water on it, then we hope that everything works all right, and then we'll ping things, and that's good enough. This telemetry is really important.
Right.
The second thing about the FP4 processor or these advanced network processors is you're going to be able to do some quite serious DDoS mitigation. Now, DDoS mitigation in the network is about protecting your network from DDoS at one stage, and secondly, it's also a service that you can sell to your customers. Now, normally you've had to put it into DDoS appliances. If you can start putting the DDoS suppression features into the silicon that's in the router that's in the plane, then all of a sudden you can start to sell that as just a straight up service without having to add anything but a bit of software to say DDoS mitigation on or off of this thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great service. So if you can get that into the box itself instead of having it saves you some steps in terms of shunting traffic and analyzing and all that offsite or off the box.
Yeah, so I think this is a serious announcement. Like, obviously, Nokia is bringing products that Alcatel-Lucent had in the pipeline, and they're launching them under the Nokia brand. It's, you can't say that Nokia created this per se, but they certainly made a lot of talk about this. I hope that if Nokia is listening and Alcatel-Lucent's listening, we'd love to hear more about this product and as it matures. And I would be very keen to see a technical deep dive on the internal architecture because it must be having a really kick-ass backplane to be able to do a half a petabit per second. And the last thing about it, while I'm thinking of it, there's no central switching engine or shelf. So this is a fully distributed architecture in that chassis. So every time you add a line card, you're adding more performance to the architecture. And there's no central switching engine or processing engine to act as a thing. And the backplane is optical, which is the coolest thing ever, right? So when you plug it in, it's not plugging electrical signals onto the backplane.
Okay,
it's an optical. Like, so that is the coolest thing ever, by the way.
Hey, maybe this was worth 3D then.
Well, it would, but I can't watch 3D because it gives me a headache. I'm one of them. And like, who owns 3D goggles?
The world is going to leave you behind, I'm afraid.
Am I in trouble? Are you angry with me?
I'm not angry. I'm with you. I have no interest in VR and 3D until we get Star Trek holodex. Until then, don't bug me.
Convert the office into a holodeck. And then
that's right. Then we're talking. And I'm never coming out.
So yeah, well done to Nokia, Alcatel-Lucent. Pretty interesting sort of a launch, and love seeing big, big hardware getting out there.
Yeah, and this is something we'll keep an eye on. We'll come back to this as we get more details. In the meantime, we have to take a quick break to thank our sponsor, IT Pro TV. With IT Pro TV, you get access to the most important tools you need to prepare for your IT certification. They offer over 2,000 hours of content and more than 125 hours of content streaming live every week. That's new content coming out every single week. You can stream these courses live or on demand worldwide from their website to your Chromecast, your Roku, your Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, or PC, wherever you want to see it. Upcoming courses include Computer Hacking, Forensic Investigator V9, CompTIA A+ 901, Accelerated CompTIA Security Plus. There are transcripts you can follow from start to finish or jump to any part of the video if you want to get to the stuff you need to know. and you can take advantage of their low monthly subscription price and a no-hassle cancellation policy. IT Pro TV has introduced a new standard membership level that gives you access to all the live and recorded video content. There's also a premium annual membership, which includes all the video content, plus access to virtual labs and Q&A forums. The cost is normally $85.70 a month or $857 a year, but we've got a special offer just for our listeners. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription, visit itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code networkbreak30. That's itpro.tv/networkbreak and use the code networkbreak30. Thanks, IT Pro TV. All right, back to the hardware news. Arisint, they've announced the ISS 10.1. This is a switching solution that's also targeting surprise web-scale data centers.
This is really odd. We've never talked to Arisint before. I found this in a very obscure corner of the internet. Arisint is apparently a company that makes software and hardware, which normally is then used by our favorite networking vendors and then branded by them and then brought to market. And I'm becoming increasingly aware that most of the products that you actually buy from your favorite incumbent vendors actually aren't made by them. They're quite often a bunch of off-the-shelf components, software and hardware, like not just chips, but the entire design of the box. So this announcement from Arisint is quite interesting because they've developed an entire operating system, which they call Converged OS. And in this particular case, they've got Converged OS running on the Marvell Prestera chipsets, which is the thing. And this is something that has like 32 ports of, you guessed it, 100 gigabit Ethernet.
There you go.
Surprise. And so what they've done is announced an iteration of this to 10.1. It's got all the features that you'd sort of expect, VXLAN, BGP, VPN, QoS, SFlow, multi-chassis lag, BGP, port densities, you know, the usual 10, 25, 40s, 50s, and 100s, and policy-based telemetry. So,
and there's that telemetry word again.
It's that telemetry word again. Yeah, apparently it's not enough just to make a chip anymore. It's got to be have extra telemetry inside. So picture a big star logo with telemetry now with added telemetry
inside. There you go.
Yeah, so I thought I'd just flag that. I'm going to add that to, we have a virtual toolbox over on the Packet Pusher's website where I try and keep track of all the operating systems that I've heard about. And I've had a big boost this week and I found another 30.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, it's just been, so I've just, in our Slack group, I asked people to give, and I've just got 10 more this morning. So it's going to be a long day getting all those updated, but good for Arisint for shipping this thing. It looks like they've just announced the operating system and that it will work on the Marvell Prestera. They're not actually announcing a piece of hardware as such, but so I think that, you know, Arisint's going to go and find somebody who's going to manufacture the Marvell Prestera and then they'll rebadge the Converged OS and bring it to market. And that might be, you know, whoever that might be. Maybe it'll be one of our favorite vendors. Maybe it won't.
We'll find out. And if you want more information, we've got links to a blog that you wrote and to their press release about this if you want to go dig into it yourself.
Yep.
All right. Moving off the hardware now for a little bit. Greg, you and I attended a webcast by Extreme Networks. The goal of the webcast was to provide a little bit more information about how they're going to integrate Avaya's networking portfolio after Extreme completes the Avaya acquisition. My key takeaway is that Extreme has promised to support Avaya equipment for the, quote, natural life of those Avaya products.
For what definition of natural and life?
Right. What does natural life mean? How long is a natural life? They did not say. 3 years, 5 years, who knows? But there is a promise there that they're not going to just yank the rug out from under the Avaya folks in the near future.
That was what we heard, basically, that they were at great pains to say Extreme loves Avaya, Extreme loves Brocade, Brocade loves Extreme, Brocade loves Avaya. So don't panic. We're keeping all of the products. Nothing's changing. All the spending's preserved. All contracts, as is, are transferred to Extreme contracts, which, unsurprisingly, the Extreme people claim is even better than the pre.
That's right. Our warranties are even better than Avaya's warranties.
So we think that our new warranties and support contracts are even better than ones you had before, without actually explaining why, of course, but just don't pay any attention to that. Move straight along. But yeah, I think this is great for those customers, of course. Brocade needed to be divested, so moving to Extreme does give those customers who have it. And of course, Extreme gets to go and prospect with those customers and to do it. They are almost certainly going to have to merge those product lines over time. I can't see.
Some kind of reconciliation, I think, is going to have to happen over time. But there's a window here in which I think they're waiting to see what kind of feedback they get from Avaya customers, what kind of uptick they get, where they see potential cross-selling opportunities. I also think there's certain Avaya products that probably aren't going to go away that they are very comfortable with filling out their own product portfolio, particularly in the data center, that, you know, maybe it'll be some Extreme products go away. I don't know. So I think because the Avaya technology is, they didn't get a lot of market traction on their own, but it's beloved by the people who own it. I can't see Extreme just sort of yanking it out of people's hands.
Yeah, my sense of Avaya is there's a lot of customers out there who have telephony gear with Avaya switches on them. And that's just a lifetime of revenue, right?
Right.
It's not like you have to work too hard to earn that service revenue.
Leave that alone.
So just maybe it's one of those, that's good money, we'll take that, and that's cash flow that helps us fund the next generation. The Brocade data center portfolio, which they didn't get the campus portfolio, of course, which helps simplify things for Extreme, because most of the Extreme switches were not necessarily data center centric. As such, they were much more. I sort of have this emerging sort of concept that Avaya is going to be well suited to the metro Ethernet and market, where they've always had a bit of a background, and the customers who want that stuff. Brocade's going to be the data center strategy. Like Extreme could slot that in as the data center capability with the VDX chassis that they had, and then keep the Extreme going and move that into the campus, and that becomes a campus portfolio. So rather than trying to sell the Extreme switches as a data center stuff and trying to go head-to-head with Cisco or, you know, Juniper in that space, maybe they can bring the Brocade switches to market and say, well, that's our data center strategy. That could be, you know, a gross oversimplification, but it's certainly one way out. So
yeah, my impression is that Extreme very much wants to be the one selling you the wireless APs and the campus switches, and then they're willing to work with the other vendors they've acquired across the rest of the portfolio.
Yeah. So I think there's, if you are one of those customers, be reassured that for the natural life, whatever that means, your existing products will continue, and you should start to, you know, engage with Extreme and work out what your long-term strategy would be.
All right, in other news, there's a market report from IHS that puts Viptela at the top of the SD-WAN pile in terms of quarterly revenue. IHS says Viptela pulled in $7.7 million for the first quarter of 2017, giving them a 21% market share.
Yeah, so these numbers are really small. Keep that in mind. But
they are. Yeah, $7 million, that's not a lot.
It doesn't sound like a lot. So that, you know, you multiply that by four and you're going to get sort of $32 million for a year if you linear, if you accelerate. So if you say it's going to go up a J-curve, you know, they're going to grow by 20 or 30% per quarter going forward. Then you're probably talking 60 or 70 million. And I want to sort of draw you back. For those of you who think, oh, these SD-WAN companies aren't very large, just remember that you don't need a lot of money to run these companies. Their hardware is cheap, as we just talked about. Their software was developed using modern tool chains. It's not hard to run these companies.
They're not supporting a lot of legacy products. They've got a very lean operation, yeah.
Yeah, so that doesn't mean they're profitable. A lot of them are venture capital funded and they're burning for growth, but that doesn't mean that these are unsound businesses. So they aren't stellar numbers, but they certainly are where I would expect them to be.
That's right. And just to round out the top three of this based on revenue, number two is VeloCloud. IHS pegs them at $4.9 million for the quarter, and Tulare coming out third with revenues of $3.8 million for the quarter. We have a link to the SDX Central article that has the full list if you want to go see where everybody sits.
And keep in mind, these people make recurring revenues. So unlike networking of old, where you place one purchase order and then you had a maintenance contract, these people are often cloud-based and they're actually billing monthly or quarterly or yearly, right? So the numbers are actually a lot less when you're invoicing as on a rental model than you are when you're buying it outright. Think about your mortgage payments and how much it would cost you to buy it outright and how much you would pay for it over 5 years.
That's true.
That's the sort of...
I'm not buying mine outright, that's for sure.
No, but that's the sort of thing you need to think about. Yeah.
All right, well, sticking with SD-WAN, the Dell'Oro Group is predicting the SD-WAN market is going to generate $1.3 billion in revenue by 2021. That's a compound annual growth rate of 33% over the next 5 years. Those numbers are generally in line with a 2016 IHS forecast that also predicts $1.3 billion by 2020, not 2021. Although there's also an IDC forecast floating around that in the generally same period says $6 billion by 2020. So we've got quite a range happening here.
I've seen numbers spread from a billion to 20 billion. So you could pick your favorite number out of your butt and it'll be as good as anyone else's.
That's right.
And it's also, it's going to come down to a whole bunch of things, Drew. You know how it works. If Cisco pulls out of the router market because everybody wants SD-WAN, do you redefine? We've got carriers out there claiming that their managed WAN services are now SD-WAN.
Sure.
So do you calculate that?
Do you calculate that? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you include cloud managed services? Like, for example, VeloCloud and Ariaka, those companies are just totally cloud-centric. Are they SD-WAN or are they just cloud backhaul? Or is it, you know... So there's so many different ways to slice and dice this that reading these numbers for the time being, unless you've got access to the report, I think you need a lot of context to understand this. So,
right. Yeah, one last number I wanted to mention just before we finish up this section. Just remember that Cisco acquired Viptela for $610 billion. If they're looking at $7 or $8 million per quarter. That's an interesting multiple that Cisco paid.
Yeah, the rumors sort of suggest that, you know, Viptela was turning over 30 million or something. And so if they bought them for 600 million, that's a 20 times multiple, which is, yeah, 20 times revenue, not profits, by the way, which is still extraordinary, right?
But, it is.
Yeah, for Cisco, I think it makes I think they paid fair money for it, given that Viptela had been annoying them in the market. And at least one part of Cisco buying Viptela is taking away their competitor.
That's right. It brings them in rather than have them out. Yes, absolutely.
Speaking of startups, if you're going to be at Cisco Live in Las Vegas this June, we'd love to see you at the Apstra Intent to Party Party. Now, Ethan and I are going to be there. You can join us and the Apstra team for dinner, drinks, and a great conversation on Monday, June 26th. That's the first Monday night during Cisco Live in Las Vegas. And we're going to be at the Border Grill in Mandalay Bay. Now, that's right between the Mandalay Bay and the main hotel, so it's really easy to find. It's an invitation-only event, right? So you have to register beforehand. It's going to be just us getting together. We'd love to see you. We'd love to introduce you to people from the Apstra team. You know that Apstra, of course, is the Intent networking company. They have this SDN controller platform, which actually is self-automated and self-configuring, and it's really quite interesting. So we were pleased to be able to head on over to their party and to tell you to come and join us. It's going to be at go.apstra.com/event-packet-pushes-party. Bit of a mouthful, so make sure you get over to the blog post that accompanies this podcast and get the link and request an invitation. Now, I'm just following up with Apstra. The invitations will be going out shortly, but we would love to see you there. It's going to be a good, fun party, and we'll see you in Vegas in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, Apstra's got interesting technology. It's worth signing up to see if you can go hear about it. And the Border Grill, I've eaten there several times. It's good food.
Yeah, should be a good night and a couple of beers to lubricate the conversation.
That's right. It's always fun to have Greg and Ethan running around with a beer in hand, and they'll chat you up.
One of the two.
Could be great. Could end very badly. Go and see.
Could go with your life.
All right, moving on. There's a story in Bloomberg quoting unnamed sources saying that Amazon is considering a purchase of Slack. That's the very popular chat application. In fact, we use it at Packet Pushers. The story also says Slack could be valued at as much as $9 billion if there is an acquisition.
So interesting, right? I think that Amazon might just be looking for something to boost out its portfolio. What are your thoughts, Drew? I think you've got just as much on this, have you?
Yeah, my first thought was, why would Amazon want Slack? And then I thought about, well, you know, they recently released Chime. That's their unified communications platform. It's clear they're trying to move into, you know, business services. Slack makes a lot of sense because it's a business collaboration platform. If Amazon is really serious about this, having something like Slack would really let them leapfrog Google in terms of at least chat and real-time messaging. Google doesn't have a strong play there. And give them more weapons to compete against Microsoft, which is also pushing into this business services and collaboration space. They've got Skype. They released their own Slack competitor. I don't know if it was this year or last year. So everybody's after this market. And if Amazon is trying to be a player here, Slack seems like a very sensible buy.
Yeah, I think so. I think it makes sense for Amazon to start pretending that it's an enterprise company. But I think Slack, of course, has very deep penetration into its actual customers.
I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. Yes. Yeah. If Amazon, startups and very developer-centric organizations that are maybe even using Amazon infrastructure as a service and other services, and you know, Slack is part of how they do their development work, how they collaborate, you know, why not use that toehold and then get Slack? Slack also is also building out more services. Like, we use it for calls and stuff now. So it really gives Amazon a nice entry into that whole business communications market if they do pick up Slack.
Yeah. And I also could see at a real stretch that Amazon needs a consumer messaging platform like iMessage or Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook chat.
Maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
There's rumors that Amazon is going to get back into the smartphone market. And, you know, they had the abort of, smartphone a while back, and maybe they're going to come back again, give it another go. And if they really do set out to build a platform, which would make perfect sense in terms of how they operate, they're already making Kindle hardware. It's not a big step from Kindle hardware to smartphones. They have a tablet, which is kind of, they have an on-again, off-again love affair. Maybe they just pull back to rethink things, or maybe even to develop their own operating system. Who knows? As we know in networking, it's obviously very easy to make operating systems because we have so many.
30 of them to add to our list.
No, the 30 I added. That's in addition to the 20 that were there.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah. So you've got to start thinking about what – I think there's a consumer play here. Maybe they're thinking we could get the Slack, instantly add value to our existing customers, put it into our portfolio. They've already got the AWS contact center. As you said, they've got Chime. They've got a range of other messaging services, SMS, email gateways, and things like that. Make perfect sense to bolt this into that at the enterprise. and also for the startups that loved them the most. And it would then help them build critical mass for a collaboration portfolio at the enterprise space. But then also you get the opportunity, once you've got a messaging plane, you can now start to slap a consumer layer on top of that.
Interesting. I didn't think about the consumer aspect.
Yeah. Well, you look at what Apple's doing with iMessage. They're now integrating Apple Pay so that you can make micropayments between people in messages. So
Amazon would love something like that to make it even easier to buy stuff.
Yeah, well, to become a banking platform.
Oh my goodness.
So that's an extension of what's actually happening in China. So in China, there's an app called WeChat.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do online transactions, you don't use PayPal or any of the banking gateways. You use WeChat to transfer money between people. You literally pay street vendors if you want to go up and buy, you know, a sandwich on the street in the China. The most common way to do that in the big cities is actually just to use WeChat. The vendor holds out their WeChat, you do a thing, and the money appears on their phone in the WeChat account.
Magic.
So there's a real business there. There's a play there around money, and I think that's possibly where Amazon wants to go. Maybe they feel that Slack's got an engine and people and a team that they could accelerate that into their business. That would be sure, just, you know, Greg the prognosticist.
One for the predictions list.
One for the spreadsheet.
Yes. And just to remind folks again, this is coming from unnamed sources. It's only a rumor. We don't have confirmation that anything like this is actually happening. But if it does, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, and we'll claim how prescient we were.
That's right. Geniuses. Pure geniuses. All right. The last story for the day, I saw this on Light Reading. It's a story about how Comcast is touting the success of a private cloud that they recently developed. It's the foundation of a customer services platform. Comcast, if you're not in the U.S., is kind of much loathed here in the United States, and they were looking for ways to improve their customer service. So according to the Light Reading story, Comcast is reporting an 81% reduction in the duration of solving customer problems, thanks in part to this private cloud platform. That's an impressive number and very cool, but I really think Comcast's problem with consumers is that they're essentially a monopoly or a duopoly here in the United States, and they can charge people very high prices for their service. And unless they fix that, customer complaints aren't really going to change.
This is in the same week that Netflix announced that it now has more paying subscribers in the U.S. than all of the top cable TV's companies combined.
Right.
Did you see that?
Yes, I did see that. Yeah, they crossed that.
You know, that doesn't include satellite. That's just cable, right? So that's not like all TV. But there are now more Netflix subscribers than there are cable TV subscribers in the U.S. completely, right?
Yeah.
If you are being much loathed for your customer service and you are being outcompeted.
That's right.
Comcast only has 22.5 million paying customers. Netflix has 49.4. You've got a problem, John.
Yeah.
And so I suspect that Comcast will be doing more than just building the odd data center to improve customer service. It might actually have to improve customer service, or its customers are just going to walk away from paying cable TV. There's some interesting secondary impacts there, by the way. Think about what happens to sports when cable TV goes away.
Right now that sort of live programming is, I think, the last holdout for why people are getting cable services. Yeah.
And increasingly people aren't watching sport. So, for example, apparently the demographics for people under 35 is like they only half as many people watch sport as people over 35. And for fundamentally, physical sports is already losing audience share because people under a certain age are now off watching, well, Netflix, or they're watching esports.
Watching Twitch.
Twitch, yeah. But, you know, there's now a whole league for electronic sports. So playing games as a... That baffles me. That just like there's a part of me that's just like, really?
That really makes me feel my age. It really does.
Yes. But anyway, I mean, because the poor service levels of Comcast, I think that this is just one in a massive investment they're making to try and retain those customers as they lose out in a big way.
The value of cable TV as a fixed service is really, I think they're going to have to move to some kind of a la carte pricing because the unbundling is just, it's happening whether they want it or not. So they've got to adapt.
Well, at the end of the day, they're only a channel to market. They're like a supermarket for content.
Right.
And the internet has always disrupted the middleman. And, you know,
yeah, you're right.
If I'm the NFL and I'm looking at is it the baseball?
NFL is football.
Yeah. Well, the baseball, the NBA, I've been reading some financial reports around how the baseball business has gone directly to the customer. They've sort of pulled out of cable TV to some level. And they're now making far more money than they ever did just out of selling baseball direct to customer, not out of going through the cable companies.
I can see that, yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting time. So secondary effects here, you know, I think companies like Comcast are going to invest heavily in technology to improve their customer service levels, like machine learning and voice gateways, and investing in their backbone so that it's actually reliable and drops less packets. And I think we've seen some turnaround in the net neutrality bait, like Comcast has stopped beating people up in public saying they have to pay to access our network because we're the secret, you know, we own the customer, not you, because that's obviously not true anymore. So yeah, very interesting times, very interesting.
Interesting times indeed. All right, well, that's all the news we have for this week. Greg, where can folks get more from you?
People can find me on the Twitter, is at EtherealMind, where I have little eructations and outbursts, most very solidly. I do microblog occasionally on etherealmind.com, but mostly I'm posting at packetpushers.net.
That's right. I'm Drew Connery Murray. I'm on Twitter at Drew_CM. I also blog at packetpushers.net. Thanks to our sponsors, that's IT Pro TV and Apstra. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Network Break. If you enjoy the show, give us a like on Facebook, leave us a recommendation on iTunes, because that is important, or share a link with your colleagues. And also, we have newsletters. That's Human Infrastructure Magazine and Link Propagation. They are free. We deliver them on a regular schedule. You can find out how to sign up for that at packetpushers.net. Thanks for listening.